our prayer. Our prayer. We say our prayer. Yeah. Okay, I'm ready. We're going to go and get started. Thanks, everybody, for coming out. Good to be back with you. I've been doing a little traveling, so I'm glad Brad was able to fill in for us and help us out. We're going to go ahead and go to our Father in prayer, and Brad's going to lead us in that prayer.
Let's pray together. Dear God, our Father in heaven, we thank you for this day, and we thank you for all the many blessings that we're so richly blessed with each and every day. We thank you for this opportunity in the middle of the week to come together and to study some from your word, and we thank you for being able to be here together with those who have the same intentions that we do, and that is to follow your word and to put it into practice in their lives. Thank you for Gerald, and help him as he directs our study this evening. Help him to develop things that we need in our lives and that we can come to see from Job, and we've done that throughout this study. Help us to understand that we're like Job and Job is like us, and help us to take those things that we learn and be encouraged by him and his faith, and help us to encourage others around about us. Dear God, there are those of our number who are have been involved in surgeries today. We know Johnny, we ask you to watch over his recovery, and Ashlyn, as she's been taken back to Vanderbilt for another surgery this afternoon. Please be with those doctors that are with her and help them to remedy her maladies in her body, and help to calm her at this time and strengthen and comfort her. And be with Jennifer and Brian also as they are with her at this time. Watch over us and forgive us of our sins and bless us and help us to be ambassadors for you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. We're in Job chapter 30 tonight. Job chapter 30. We're going to do 30 and 31. I had thought about doing 32, but 30 and 31 are like 32 verses and 40 verses. So I figured that was enough to get through tonight on that. It looks like our progress in the book is going really well. It looks like we'll finish the whole book, so I'm excited about that. I wasn't for sure about a month ago if we didn't even finish 15 chapters, so I'm pretty excited that we were able to do that. So we're going to pick up here in Job chapter 30, verses 1 through 8. But this younger than I mocked me, whose father I disdained to put with the dogs of my flock. Indeed, what was good was the strength of their hands to me. Vigor had perished from me, from them. From want to famine, they are gout with gnaw and dry ground by night and waste and desolation. Who pluck mellow by the bushes, and whose food is the root of the broom shrub. They are driven from the community. They shout against them as against a thief, so that they dwell in the dreadful valleys and holes of the earth and of the rocks. Among the bushes they cry out, under the nettles they gather together. Fools, even those without a name, they are scourged from the land. I had to read this a couple times because I didn't know what Job was talking about or what particular group he was talking about. And then I started studying a little bit more and read some of the commentaries. And it's interesting here that he's talking about these younger than I, these younger men, maybe teenagers, but young men at that, or even younger than him. And he said, these people are mocking him, but they are the children of the fathers that he disdained. These are the children of the men who Job didn't like at all, weren't good men. And they were so bad that he wouldn't even put them with the dogs of my flock. They were so bad that he wouldn't even put them with the least job that he had. It would have been the worst job you could find. I mean, he wouldn't put them with... I'm trying to think of a really bad job, and I can't think of a really bad job. But whatever job is bad in our society, he wouldn't even let them do that job. Because they were so bad. So those children are the ones that are mocking him. And so I'm sure that their fathers probably knew that Job didn't like them or didn't like their actions or who they were or how they acted. And he said, you know, indeed, what good is strength of their hand to me? Vigor had perished from them. And he continues to talk about how they are and what they do. And so these people who he assumes are really bad or really low, that weren't worth the jobs Their parents weren't even worth the jobs that were the worst job you could have. That's who's mocking him now. And that's pretty tough for him. And so I looked at this two-way. Job's situation is so bad that the least in the society are mocking him. So as far as pecking order goes, he is below, in his mind, and the situation that's going on, he is below the low. Homeless people are making fun of him. Okay? So that's like homeless people think they're doing better than Job. That's like in our society. I can't think of any situation other than that. So you know, when homeless people are making fun of you, and they think they're better than you are, does it get any worse in society than being homeless and not having anything or anybody? That's how bad it's gotten for Job. The worst people in the society are the ones that are coming at him. And so that must be tough. And so then I began to think about it a little further. I thought about my situation in life. And I always hate bringing these situations up because I'm always afraid that, you know, you talk about them and then you say what you say you'll do. Then you have to go through that situation to see if you actually will do what you say you're going to do, and you talk about it. But I kind of thought about it. If I lost everything tomorrow, or if I went bankrupt tomorrow, and I feel like I've been a pretty good businessman to this point in my life. I've made plenty of mistakes. I've lost plenty of money. I've made money. I've done everything in between, right? But you know what would hurt me more tomorrow than losing everything? Anybody have any idea what would hurt me? What would be the biggest challenge for me, and I think for most people, tomorrow if I lost everything? Family. But go a little bit further with that. God, that would bother me. Maybe it's just me. My pride. Knowing that I have to go and tell everybody where I used to be in one position in life, and now I've lost everything. I have nothing. I think if any of us, if we're here and we got to face our family, we got to face our friends, our church group, our people in society. We have to cancel, you know, cable or whatever you got to do, you know, because of some situation. I think maybe just me, maybe that's just me, but I think that'd be the hardest thing to overcome. So I bring that up to say this: who's making fun of him? These people whom Job thought that he was probably better than. So I ask this question then. Job has almost lost all of his pride. At the end of the day, if you don't have a little pride, what do you got? What keeps you from being completely nothing in life? If I'm off base, please, and I'm looking for some comments too. But I mean, the thing that keeps you from eating out of a dog bowl and eating dog food. And maybe we need to sometimes, but you know, you still got a little worth about yourself. Job is he's almost there, and I think as we read this, you're gonna see a bit more here. And so it really bothers him that these people, whom he wouldn't even give the job, their fathers wouldn't even give him that job, they're the ones who are mocking him. And so it's bothering him. So any comments? Okay, we got a comment here. And these are just some thoughts from my head. I could be completely off base. I just thought of them like 2 minutes ago. No, I'm kidding. It was long.
I was just going to say one word I think of when I think of pride is desperation. The more desperate you come, the lower your pride drops. So I think that's kind of what we see here.
I think sometimes we think of pride in a negative way, but I think sometimes pride is also a positive thing too. But go ahead.
Gerald, I'd go one step farther. I mean, in homeless, I'm sure there are people who are homeless who don't want to be homeless. But this, I believe, is even more than that. The comment I wrote down was, and we all know people like this, they kind of waste air. You know, it's a waste. They're using up air that somebody beneficial. You know, they don't have a want to. They have no will. Those are the kind of people that are making fun of Joe. You know, they're beyond. I mean, homeless would be a step up for these folks. That's just me. I mean, that's just my thoughts. I mean, Curtis describes a slack-jawed mouth breather.
Wow.
And you know, and that, we all know those folks. I mean, that would be a step up for these. There's no will, there's no want to, there's just no desire to do anything.
And when they're making fun of you, you got to feel pretty. You got to feel pretty rough, right here.
I guess one, I would think a better word for pride would be dignity.
Okay, that's a good word.
And it's like Job's telling the story that he's been dehumanized.
Sure. Yeah, great comment. Great comment. Any other comments? I almost think that this is worse for him, maybe even the illness and the sickness and everything. All his friends have been kind of getting on him, and now he's got people in the community that are I can't even repeat Curtis's comment. Slack jaw. I got to write these down. Can we get these in a book, Marianne? Because the one I've memorized is hanging in there like a hair in a biscuit. I've got that one to memory, but I haven't got the slap jaw. Slack jaw. Okay, I'll get it. I'm gonna write these down because those are good. Those are good. Okay, so this is Job's pride or dignity or whatever is just really. I mean, it's really, really coming at him here, and so it's kind of crazy. Okay, verse 9. And now I have become their taunt. He's still pouring it out. I have become their taunt. It's almost like they've made up a song about Job, and he's the joke of all jokes here. I've even become a byword to them. I guess he did. A byword. I mean, it's like, who was the guy who was the doctor that helped John Wilkes Booth? What was his name? Mud. Last name's Mud. So everyone, your name is Mud. That's how Job has become. Like that guy. Your name is Mud. Okay. They abhor me. They stand aloof from me. And they do not refrain from spitting at my face. And they do not refrain from sitting in my face because he has loosed his bowstring and afflicted me. They have cast off the bridle before me. Oh, the right hand their brood arises. They thrust aside my feet and build up against me with their destruction. They break up my path. They profit from my destruction. No one restrains them. As though a wide breach they came, amid the tempest they roll on. Terrors have turned against me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity has passed away like a cloud. What would be worse? Now think about this. What would be worse in a group of people if the way we've described them, and they in your life when you were doing well, they weren't people that were you didn't want to associate with or be around because of how they were, and now they are profiting off of you. And how you've been taken to the bottom. Would that be tough for you? I think this kind of stuff may be worse than the illness and sickness for him. Because these people, they're taunting, it's a byword, they're profiting off of him, they're doing, ways of their destruction have built up against them, they are just coming right at him. And I couldn't think of another thing to say other than they are really giving it to Job. I mean, they are really giving it to Job. Unlike his friends, they're actually doing stuff. Where the friends were saying stuff, they were doing stuff. And so now they're really, really giving it to him, and so it's really bothering him. Any questions or comments on this section? Okay, all right, it's good. I'm just kidding. Okay, 16 through 23. And now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have seized me. At night it pierced my bones within me, and my gnawing pains take no rest. My great force, my garment is distorted. It binds me about the collar of my coat. It has cast me into the mirror. I have become like dust and ashes. I cry out to you for help, but you do not answer. I stand up and turn for your attention against me. You have become cruel to me. With the might of your hand, you persecute me. You lift me up in the wind and cause me to ride. You have dissolved me in the storm, for I know that you will bring me to death and the house of the meeting for all the living. And so he begins starting out here about how he's poured himself out. He says, the days of affliction, they've seized me. This whole thing is just, it's got to me. It's coming at me. At night, it pierces my bones. And I always like to do this. I've done this several times. I don't want to gross anybody out. But let's think about Job's situation real quick. Job is probably laying in a bed of some sort. I'm pretty sure it's not a sleep comfort bed. He doesn't have a number on it, so he's not like number 26 or something. It's probably not the most comfortable bed ever made. He has boils all over him. These boils, though, I have a doctor friend who's actually going to send me a picture of what this looks like by the end of the class. But anyway, they have pus coming out of them. They've exploded. They've got stuff coming out of them, fluid. They have put maggots on them to keep these from doing this. This is from head to toe. This is all over his body, from head to toe, feet, everywhere. They've got maggots there to help clean that up. He can't sleep because he has nightmares constantly because during the sleep and everything. So he's got pain. He's got his friends that think he's guilty of everything, and they've come to him. Now he's got the worst people that he thinks in society that are making fun of him, and his name is just some joke to them now. And he says, this has seized me, and at night it pierces my bones with me, and my gnawing pains take no rest. So he's awake, he can't get rest. He's sleeping, he can't get rest, and he's in constant pain. All right, so that's Job's situation. So then he goes on to say here, by a great force of my garment is destroyed, and it binds me. So he goes on, but then he starts calling out here. This first one here, when it says here, it says a great force, a better translation. Does anybody have a King James in here? Does it say by God instead of a great force? Anybody have a version that says God there instead of great force? Or is that just Homer Haley's translation of that? Anybody have an old King James that says God? Old American Standard. The great force there, most commentators think that it's referring to God, and it makes sense here in a minute. So when it says, by God, and take the great force out, by God, a force, my garments is destroyed, it binds me. It makes more sense, because in verse 19, he says, he cast me. And look here, it says, verse 19, he cast me into the mirror and have become like dust. And look at all the pronouns here. You do not answer me. You turn your attention against me. You have become cruel to me with might of your hand and persecute me. You dissolve me in a storm and you will bring me to death. He's referring this back to God. He's taking all this in and everything that's got here, and he is throwing it right at God. And one of the things we brought up in the class, why is that so ironic? Who could he be referring this to instead of God? Who would be another choice? Would be Satan. And I know we probably have talked about this a lot, but it's so funny how we just conclude that it's God. And maybe we do because the buck stops with God. God's in control of everything. So at the end of the day, I guess you could say God was doing this. If you wanted to argue that point, because he's in control of everything, but it's actually not God. It's actually Satan. And we need to remember that in our life as we go through things. You know, always question, is this from God or is this from Satan? And I would add, and I think it's scriptural too, not just bad things, but good things. There have been a lot of good opportunities that I thought were good opportunities from the flesh standpoint that were from Satan that weren't really good opportunities. Or things that look good that if I would have bit into that apple, it would have not turned out to be good at all. And the reason I know that is because there's a few times that I went for the bait. Curtis has a sermon. He preached it here when he tried out. I love that sermon. I need to steal it from him at some point. But the fishing sermon about how Satan's always casting lures in front of us. And of course, he tells all kinds of fishing stories. But you know, every once in a while, unfortunately, some of us bite on the lure. We bite. And if you ever look in a tackle box of a fisherman, my grandfather loved to fish. They did all kinds. They did trot lines. They did jug fishing. But then they did bass fishing. And I never have understood. And I make jokes about this when I've got people fishing right now. I'm like, is the white worm biting today, or is it the green worm? Or is it the purple worm? Or is it the blue worm? Or is it the speckled, you know, whatever. You know, they got, when you look in a fisherman's fishing box, they got 850 different kinds of lures. They got flicky things and turny things. And you know, and they believe, a good fisherman has a couple of baits, they believe. And if that's not enough, what do? They squirt stuff on them. They squirt smelly good stuff. If the flicker's not enough, then the smelly good stuff will attract them. Satan works the exact same way. He works the same way. He's trying every lure, every smelly good thing, everything he can get in front of you. And whether it's what we think is good or bad, you know, think about it. Is it from God or is it from Satan? Is this from God or is this from Satan? And he just assumes that it's from God. So any questions or comments on this section? Got Nate down here in the front.
I guess I don't want to read too much into it, Gerald, but you know, if we parallel this chapter with chapter 29, you know, the immediate chapter before, he's comparing and contrasting. In chapter 29, he's like, I had it. I was being rewarded for my righteousness. Life was good. And now all of this has happened. And in a way, I mean, I don't want to, again, like I said, read too much into what he's saying, but by him turning this on God, whether he believes in a Satan or believes in some sort of evil power, I think what he's saying is, just as life was this way, where we had these people, these men that I wouldn't put with my dogs and their sons and whatever, because of who I was, I kept them in check. You know, I was a man of integrity, I was a man of righteousness, and because of that, I used my wealth to help the oppressed. I used my wealth to you know, keep the bad people from doing what they were doing. But because I have been wronged, because I have been injured, because I've had everything taken away from me, they're running amok. And if you look at that from a big perspective, from a galactic perspective, who else could do that but God? Because nobody can inflict God with boils. Nobody can kill God's children and take away his health and torment him the way that Job is being tormented. And he understands that. And so he's saying, look, somebody didn't catch God on a bad day, and then he's like, Job, I can't help you out. I'm sorry, I'm dealing with my own problems. He doesn't have that. So what other recourse is there other than just to say, God, why are you doing that? I mean, that's just my...
Well, and I think it's a great point. I think he brings up the point that we're not as smart as we think we are sometimes. You know, that's logical. That logically makes sense. And I think a lot of times there's a lot of things that logically make sense in a human, earthly thinking. Who thinks it's a good idea to send the only begotten Son and crucify him on the cross and have him beat, scourged, and have him go through the suffering? Does anybody in here think that's a good idea? If I were coming up with that plan, that would not be the plan that I would come up with. I'm just saying. Now, that's not saying that it's wrong. It's not. It was the best plan out there, but it wouldn't be the plan that I would come up with in my head. So,
sorry. when I think about this idea, it makes me almost think that. So we can say that in
you're
this
being
case,
recorded, so make sure.
Yeah, I know.
About it. I'm just kidding.
I know.
No, I'm not kidding. You really are being recorded.
Yeah, yeah. I see his merit and why he is asking God about these things, because really God is the one allowing all this to happen. Satan is doing it, but God can stop him any second he wants to. So really God is the ultimate authority, but he just doesn't see the underlying antagonist.
Yeah, I mean, we can and we can get all kinds of crazy questions that you can build upon that and try to understand, you know, how is God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit all one and the same? It gets complicated. Yeah, God ultimately is in control, but God is not doing this, which is kind of crazy. Right here?
It's interesting that sometimes we see as negative when we complain to God. Like, we usually paint the... it's like when people complain to God or when people blame God, we see it as something negative. However, when we go to God, period, that is a gain. Because we could be going to so many other sources.
Sure.
And I think Job is real, like, ultimately will realize that he had to eat his words up. But, I mean, at least he's going to the right source.
Sure. I think that's great. And he has having a conversation with God. in that. Excellent, excellent. Okay, and I think chapter 31, you're going to see, chapter 31 is very interesting to me. Anyway, we'll get there. I'm not going to say any more because I'll see it when we get there. Yet, does not one in a heap of ruin stretch out his hand, or in a disaster therefore cry out for help? Have I not wept for one of those whose life is hard? Was not my soul grieved for the needy? When I expected good, then evil came. When I waited for light, then darkness came. I'm seething within and cannot relax. Days of affliction confront me. I go about mourning without comfort. I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help. I have become a brother to jackals and a companion of the ostrich. My skin turns black on me. He says, I'm crying out and nobody's giving me a hand. Nobody's helping me. I'm in quicksand about to go under and I can't get anything. And I find it interesting here. Did I highlight it? I didn't highlight it. When I expect good, verse 37, then evil comes. When I expect good to happen, evil comes. When I waited for light, then darkness came. You ever felt like you had a day like that before? You were thinking, Ruby's laughing up here. She must have had several days like that. When you're thinking or hoping one thing's going to happen and it's just the opposite, and you get boom, and it's like two or three of them in the same day, and you're like, wow. If I wouldn't have woken up today and just slept all day, my day would have turned out better and would have been of more use than me living this day. That's what Job is feeling. This even worse. He, I love that statement. When I expected good, evil came. When I waited for light, darkness came. And he stretches out his hand. And so Job doesn't feel like anyone is helping him. He's getting help from nowhere. He's not getting help from his friends. He's not getting help from people in the community. He's not getting help from his wife. He's not getting help from God. He feels all alone and nobody is helping him. This is a natural human feeling. We've all felt that way at some point or another. I think everybody has felt that way at some point or another. And it's good to know that somebody besides me has felt that way in whatever situation that there is. But this is not true. This is not true. We know God cares in the situation because we know the whole story. And we know that when it's all said and done, that it will turn out the way it needs to turn out here. So Job is not all alone and somebody is there to help him. Any questions or comments on this section? Okay. And I highlighted it after I read it like six times. Okay. Job 31, 1 through 4. I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? And what is the portion of God from above or from the heritage of Almighty from the high? Is not calamity to the unjust and disaster to those who work iniquity? Does he not see my ways and number all my steps? 31, as you're going to see here in a minute, is going to be a passage in which Job's going to lay out his picture of why he is such a just man and why good things should happen to him and bad things shouldn't. I find it ironic here that he points that out. He goes, calamity should happen to bad people, not good people. Why do I find that ironic? Okay. He was a perfect man and bad things happen. We think about Job. What have all of his friends been saying the whole time? His friends have been saying the same thing he's saying. They've been saying it in reverse order. They're saying Job's bad. That's why bad things are happening to him. Job is saying, yes, bad things should happen to bad people. Okay, Job, let's use your reasoning. It's the same as your friends. Bad things have happened to you. Therefore, you must be bad. Am I missing that? If I use Job's logic? Did I miss that? Job has the same logic he's been arguing against from all of his friends. But he didn't think he's bad, and now he's going to argue that he's not bad. And his first argument on his righteousness is before he makes that statement, he says, I made a covenant with my eyes, how then could I gaze on a virgin? I find that an odd verse to be thrown in the middle of all this. Because then he talks about bad things happening to bad people. I just find it very... Is that odd to anybody else but me? It's just a strange... It should have been like in verse 6 or something. But right here where it's at, it just doesn't fit in. Anybody got a comment or question on that? Or?
To me, Gerald, it just means... Covenant, it means choice.
You know, he made a choice. He made a choice to do right things. That's what it says to me. You know, it's telling us, I made a choice. It's talking about, I made a choice to be a faithful husband. And that's the way I'm headed. I made a choice to do these right things. And I made a choice to help those who were needy.
Sure.
And I made a choice to do the thing. And all these things that, you know, he was able to check off, just like we check them off on our laundry list of what it means to be a Christian. And, you know, check, check, check.
That's yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. The rest of the chapter, it seems correct. But that one verse just seems out of place.
What? Here's who I am.
Yep.
And it is oddly placed.
Yeah. Yeah. Got one here in the middle. This is a passage that's quoted quite a bit. People talk about making a covenant with their eyes, and you probably wonder where they got it from. Well, they got it from Job chapter 30. Well, maybe they got it from somewhere else, but it's here in Job 31.
Do you suppose it might be one of the accusations that some of the people that were taunting him might have said, you know, all this is happening to him. Well, you know, he must have, you know, cheated on his wife. He must have, you know.
Sure.
So he's answering that.
Sure, I suppose that's possible. I hadn't heard anything up to this point, but we don't know what all they were saying. So, yeah. So anyway, he says that. Then he says, bad things happen to bad people. And he says, verse 4, does he not see my ways and understand all my steps? So he has the same conclusion as his friend. Good things happen to good people. Bad things happen to bad people. I'm a good person. Why are bad things happening to me? It's almost as if he still hasn't. They haven't got this yet. And we do not need to fall in that trap either. We do not need to fall in that trap. When bad things are happening to your life, I'm not going to get into a whole sermon on it because I'm in the process of writing one. It doesn't mean anything necessarily about your spirituality or that. Because if we fall into that, then the TV evangelists are right. Because TV evangelists says, send me $1,000 and you'll get $20,000. And if you do good, then good things happen to you. If that's the case, then I'm getting shortchanged, I think. Now, I'm not trying to say I'm a great person or anything, but, you know, that's just not how it works. Nate, you have a comment?
He hasn't even done anything.
Yeah.
He's taken that a step further. You know, I know that it's wrong to do something, but I'm not even looking at other women. You know, where all these other men that might be considered righteous are still looking around with their eyes and searching. I'm not even there. That's not even me. So if anybody needs to be punished, it's not me, because I'm way over here on the righteous side.
Now, don't tell my wife this, and this is being recorded, so I better watch out. But I think it's funny that he used the word virgin. It's okay to look at other women, just not virgins. No, that's not what that... I don't think that's what he's saying. That came to mind, like, so, Job, it's okay to look at all the other women, just not virgins. But anyway. Okay. So, Job is still thinking like everyone else, which I said, and what he's going here. Verse 5. If I've walked with falsehood, and my feet have hastened after deceit, let him weigh me with accurate scales. And let God know my integrity. If my steps have turned from the way, or my heart followed my eyes, or if my spot has stuck to my head, let me sow another eat, and let the crops be uprooted. Hey, if I've done anything, punish me for it. It's almost like, punish me for the crime. I'm being punished for some huge crime. If I've done something like this, you know, you don't kill somebody for stealing a can of peaches out of the grocery store, okay? That would be probably the wrong punishment for the crime. And it's almost like he's saying, okay, punish me for what it is. Judge me for the wrongs I've committed. If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or I've lurked at my neighbor's doorway, may my wife grind for another and let others kneel down over her? For what would it be a lustful crime? Moreover, it would be iniquity punishable by judges. For it would be fire that consumes, and the word abdomen, I should have looked at the translation I was getting this from. Destruction would be a better word there. Consumed to destruction and would uproot all my increase. Once again, if I've done this, then punish me this way. Do this. If I have despised the claim of my male or female slaves when they filed a complaint against me, what then I could do when God arises? And when He calls me to account, what will I answer Him? Did not He who made me in the womb make Him, and the same one fashion us in the womb? So, once again, pointing out the crime, pointing out what He would do here, Job has continually been like, I haven't done this, but if I have, shouldn't this be done? A lot of people quote this on life, about being in the womb and the start of life. They quote this Job passage, one of the ones that they look at. So, did not he who made me in the womb make him? They go, that's a good passage. That's talking about God. So if you want to talk about that, I think that's one that's interesting there. Job 31:16-23. If I have kept the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of a widow to fail, or if I have eaten of my morsel alone, and the orphan has not shared it, but from my youth he grew up with me as a father, and from infancy I guided her. If I have seen anyone perish for the lack of clothing, or that the needy had no covering, if his loins had been thanked me, if he has not been warmed in the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the orphan, because I saw I had support in the gate, let my shoulder fall from the socket, and my arm be broken off at the elbow, for calamity from God is a terror to me, and because of His majesty I can do nothing. And I think he's just pouring out, you know, if I've done these things, punish me this way. Do this to me. I don't think he thinks he has done these things, but he's actually kind of pleading, if I've done. And I like how he's specific. He's gone through each one of these little ones, one by one by one by one, all the things that could happen in the community. I can understand this. I know at work, or I know in life or any situation, if you're being accused of doing something that you haven't done, what would you do? Would you not defend yourself? How far would you defend yourself? Yeah. I mean, we see movies like the one with Harrison Ford, you know, supposedly killed his wife. What is that, The Fugitive, or what is that called? You know, and we see movies like that, and those are real interesting movies, but how far would you go? If everybody's saying you're guilty, and even the lowest of the earth is saying you're guilty, and you're going through, and you're asking God, and you're not guilty, how far would you go? See, that's got to be pretty tough on him. I almost think that this kind of stuff is tougher than the actual physical stuff. What's the saying in kindergarten and first grade or third grade, Kim and Sarah? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me or whatever. That's not true, right? I mean, that's like the most false statement we teach little kids. Break my bones all day long, but your words will kill me. Your words will cut to my heart and make me, you know, cry in pain. I think he kind of talks more about this stuff than he does the pain and suffering he's going through, all different people. And so he's trying to defend this, and he's trying to... Once again, the punishment needs to fit the crime. The punishment he's getting is none of these crimes. He's getting the like worst punishment you could get. He's getting the electric chair for, you know, stealing a car. You know, we don't put people in the electric chair for stealing a car. Now, we used to hang people for stealing horses, though. So that was pretty bad. But these crimes. Any questions or comments about these couple sections here? I actually think in Kentucky it's still on the books if you steal a horse, you get hung. So, anybody thinking about stealing a horse? Think about that. 24-28. If I had put my confidence in gold and called fine gold my trust, if I have gloated because of my wealth was great and because of my hand was secured so much, if I have looked at the sun when it is shown or the moon going in splendor and my heart became secretly enticed, and my hand threw a kiss from my mouth, that too would have been iniquity calling for judgment, for I would have denied God above. Continuing on here, pouring his heart out. If I'd have done this, and if I'd have done this, and if I'd have done this. And just keeps pleading here. Have I rejoiced at the extinction of my enemy? or exalted when evil befell him? No, I have not allowed my mouth to sin because asking for his life is in a curse. Had the men of my tent not said, who can find one who has not been satisfied with his meat? The alien has not lodged outside, for I have opened my doors to travelers. Have I covered my transgressions like Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom? Because I feared the great multitude, and the contempt of families terrified me, and kept silent and did not go out the doors. Or that I had one who hear me, behold, here is my signature. Let the Almighty answer me in the indictment which my adversary has written. And he continues on about, you know, even when there was a multitude or a mob, and some people, they don't know what he's talking about as far as mentioning Adam here. I actually thought the word Adam kind of was interesting. He throws the word Adam out. I didn't see anybody else in the commentaries talking about it, so I guess nobody that looked at that thought it was interesting but me. But I find it interesting, how did he learn about Adam? Moses hadn't written, there was no Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus at the time here. So, we can't go there. I don't know the answer to that. I'm bringing up a subject I don't even know the answer to. Or is Adam just talking about people in general? He's talking about mankind? Or is he actually talking about the Adam? I don't know. But he's saying here, you know, transgressors like Adam, maybe from the first sin, or I don't know. But he says here all these things. In verse 35, oh, that I had one to hear me. If I just had one to hear me. If I just had somebody to hear me out. And think about that. If you were innocent, who would you be telling? What is the first thing we want to be done when we think somebody has said something against us? What's the first thing we want to happen? Well, I probably bad question. We want to go to somebody and tell them our side of the story for them to do what? Agree with us. Take our side. That's the first thing. We want somebody to take our side. And we get one person to take our side, then we're like, hey, I may be right. Maybe if I go tell somebody else to take my side, then... Oh, that one would hear me. Behold, here's my signature. If just one would hear me and take my side, nobody's taking my side. Nobody's hearing me. I haven't done anything. And bad things are happening to me. And they shouldn't. They should be only good things. Which is, he misunderstood that. But if it's just someone would just hear me. Somebody would just hear me. They would know different. Let the Almighty answer me. He's going to get the Almighty to answer me. He's probably not going to get him to answer him the way that he wants to. Beware what you ask for sometimes. Beware what you ask for, because sometimes you may get what you ask for. He's going to get it, and he's going to get he's going to get taught a lesson. But he's going to get it, though. He's asking for it, and he's finally going to get it. But he wants the Almighty to answer him and answer me here and answer this indictment that has been written against him. Any questions or comments about this section? I like that. Let the Almighty answer me, this indictment. All right, this is the last four verses of this chapter, and we'll be ending right at time. Who's got the bell tonight? What time does the bell ring? Is it 40 or 40? 42? Okay. Surely I would carry it on my shoulder. I would bind it to myself like a crown. I would declare to him the number of my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. If my land cries out against me and its furies weep together, if I've eaten its fruit without money, or if I've caused its owner to lose their lives, let briars grow instead of wheat and stinkweed instead of barley. The words of Job are ended. And he continues on with that. You know, if I've done any of these things, let this happen to me. Let this happen. Let this sin happen. Let this punishment happen. And yet he feels he's being punished for something greater than anything that he could have possibly done. And yes, it is great. And it is a great thing that is happening to him. Any final questions or comments about 30 and 31? I really like these verses. I like his 31 because you really see him trying to plead and trying to get understanding here. So, on Sunday, we'll do 32 and 33, maybe 34. We'll see how we're moving on. Thank you, guys.